everyone, and welcome to the Catalyst Stories podcast. I'm John Hino, your host for today's episode. And I'd like to start by wishing all of you a blessed and belated 2023. I'd also like to thank Damon Gohada for hosting Catalyst Stories a few weeks ago while I shared my testimony. Okay, today, I'm so excited and thrilled to welcome Brett Harada to the podcast. Now, Brett is one of the senior staff here at Catalyst. He leads the middle school group who have been called the Forge. That's their name. Brett and his wife, Brittany, lead a small group here at Catalyst. Brett also supports and works part-time for Ahava Design, which is the church's graphic and design company. Brett is part of the strike team at Catalyst. And finally, Brett can be heard on numerous episodes of the Engage to Flourish podcast, sharing his thoughts alongside Damon and more recently, Kyle and Mimo as well. On a personal note, Brett and Brittany will be celebrating their 2-year wedding anniversary this February. So a big congratulations to both of you. And with that, Brett, welcome to Catalyst Stories.
Hey, John, what a grand entrance. I feel like you really set the stage.
Yeah, well, it's so awesome to have you, Brett. And now, I did want to point out that your desk and office space is literally right here in the recording studio. And so many times while we're recording, Brett, you've been able to listen in and soak in what some of the guests have been sharing and about God's hand in their lives. So I thought I could start by asking you what that's been like for you to hear some of the testimonies from our church family live here in the studio.
Yeah, I have the privilege. It's almost like one of those movie premiere where it's like limited access and only certain people get to hear. I just so happen to have the opportunity to be working. And oftentimes I'll have my AirPods in because if I'm just working on my own, I don't want to distract anybody else. But when somebody comes in or you guys are recording, I totally shut my other podcasts off or take out the music and I'm all ears. And it's been a real blessing, to be completely honest, like not even just to, you know, promote the podcast or to make people feel good about themselves, but it's been, eye-opening just how many stories people have.
Yeah.
Like for this podcast specifically, right? Like there's been people that I know pretty well that have come on, and then there's other people that I don't know as well. And in both cases, I've had moments of chills of just like, whoa, like that, there's something there that's powerful. It's just things that hit you in a different place that you just wouldn't have guessed or you wouldn't have assumed or it wouldn't even be on your radar. And so it has been a blessing to be able to work and also get to hear, you know, these stories and testimonies and the ways that God has worked while I'm at work. It's an environment that I can't complain about, and I feel fortunate that I get to witness that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's amazing. I kind of feel like you and sometimes when Damon's in here, that you guys are like the cheerleaders in a way, because I can see, you know, God touching both of you as our guests have been sharing their podcasts. And so it's kind of like you feel like there's cheerleaders in the back going, go, God, go.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely a cheerleader. I'm sure you're focused when you're doing these podcasts, but if you ever got a glimpse of me, sometimes I'm just shaking my head and like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Or
sometimes I'm fist pumping because they share something and I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. And so definitely a cheerleader, and I'm definitely rooting on you know, any guest that comes on and what you do here and the ways that you're able to really invite people to share their stories. I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Brett. And I'm so excited to be able to capture your testimony. And so I wanted to jump right in. I know we've all experienced the emotions of fear and anxiety at different times in our lives. And so I wondered if you can start by sharing when you first started becoming aware of these emotions in your life, and then how these emotions became highlighted to you during a baseball game while you were, I think, in the sixth grade. And so I wondered if you can share about that.
Definitely. You know, I think these days mental health and anxiety or you know, just a lot of mental health awareness is really common. Mm-hmm. Some might say it's quote unquote popular now, but yeah, if it was back when I was in sixth grade, that was at least 18 years ago.
Yeah.
And I, going back to my sixth grade self, mm-hmm. I had no idea mm-hmm. what it was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone gets nervous before things.
Yeah.
Whether it be a sporting event, having to give a presentation or stand in public speaking, right? Being in a play, mm-hmm. band concert, you know, all of those things, people get nervous. And I thought, you know, and my parents assumed too, I would tell them, you know, I'm nervous, I don't feel good. And, you know, people have performance anxiety. People get mm-hmm. nervous before whatever it is, even the people at the highest level
yeah.
of competition or concert or mm-hmm. whatever, they get nervous. Mm-hmm. And so
yeah, absolutely.
It was just part of that. Okay. You're just, it's normal. Don't mm-hmm. worry, you know, normalize the anxiety that it's okay. You'll make it through it. You'll be okay. And so I didn't think too much of it. Mm-hmm. And then one of my baseball games, I still clearly remember it. Mm-hmm. I'd been playing T-ball since I was, I don't know how young. So it wasn't that it was new to me, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. it was, for some reason, I it was my turn to go up to bat, and you know, my heart was racing. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't like the beginning of the game. It was like just a regular game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my heart's racing and my chest feels tight, and I kind of feel like I can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
My throat feels like it's getting dry and closing up, and I'm getting kind of like, yeah, I just haven't felt that sensation before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And before I'm about to go up to bat, I actually leave the field and run to a trash can that's off on the side of the field, and I start dry heaving and gagging mm-hmm. because I feel like my throat's closed and
yeah.
I can't breathe, and essentially I'm in complete like panic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I have no idea what just hit me.
Yeah.
Right. Like I have played before. I've done it. I don't know how many times before. It's nothing different.
Right.
And I'm kind of just left shocked almost.
Yeah.
Because my dad was the coach and he's still like, hey, like, are you like, what happened? Are you going to bat? Like, and I'm kind of just standing there like dazed almost. Like,
right.
I don't know what just happened to me. And so I tell him, yeah. I can't.
Must have been frightening too, because you sure. don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you know? And I told him I can't, and he's yeah. like, "What do you mean you can't?" And I was like, "I don't know. Like, I don't know what happened."
Right.
And so, you know, I had grown up having asthma, and so maybe they thought maybe it's an asthma attack or different things, but it wasn't that same sensation where I'm wheezing or,
yeah.
you know, you can hear my breath being short. It was more of a internal feeling, a feeling of, mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's just something that came over me that I couldn't control. Normally you can dictate a little bit
mm-hmm,
of your breathing, or you can tell, okay, I'm going to need my inhaler, or I need a sip of water or right. things of that nature. But it was something that was outside of me for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have this experience at the baseball game, and then I think you were sharing that this translated to other areas where even school became difficult.
Yeah. After this first episode or panic attack, I would find out later that it was a panic attack.
Okay.
But after that moment, it started to happen almost anytime I was in a situation that was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, it affected any basketball game. It affected just being in school and sitting in class.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So part of sixth grade, I was in and out of school. Moving on to middle school, I ended up having such a hard time that I had to go on like independent study. And so I would say for almost half or 3/4 of the year, I couldn't be at school. And if I was at school, I'd spend the majority of my time at school in the nurse's office, because I just couldn't handle sitting in class. I felt like I was getting those same sensations. Like I can't breathe, my throat's closing, start choking, or just, yeah, I couldn't handle paying attention and sitting there and waiting. And, not even worried about answering a question or turning in my assignment, but just physically being there was too much for me.
Right, right. Yeah, that must have been very frustrating. You know, again, not being able to control the situation. And I think you were even saying that that even turned to some anger and resentment as well, because you had a hard time seeing God. How could God be in those moments of my struggling?
Yeah, I mean, you know, being 12, 13, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, as much as I don't know and as naive as I was, I had grown up in the church.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Bible stories, you know, you hear about the miracles, you hear about Jesus healing people that are sick, you hear about who Jesus is and all that mm-hmm, he does, right? That he's died on the cross. And so all of our sins are forgiven, and
yeah,
he's made us new, right?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It seemed like in those years, in those moments, the things that I knew, how my life was, it was very contradictory. Like, okay, how come I go to church and I know who God is and I know these things, but mm-hmm, I don't see or feel any of that? How come in class when you're asking about Jesus and him healing or the different stories, or you hear the gospel message, it doesn't translate into your life. It doesn't translate into your experience with the world. And so I really wrestled with that, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, I was hurt, and I felt like, okay, God, if you're this big God, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, what the heck is this?
Right.
You say you can do all of this. How come I can't even feel normal to just sit in class.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even like school. I didn't even like school.
Yeah.
And I would complain about how come I can't just be normal like everybody else and just sit in class.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I would never ask for that. I don't want to, you know, yeah. Normally I would want to be out of class, but to have to struggle in that way. Yeah, it did. I started to build some anger and resentment, mm-hmm, and bitterness and frustration with God, like directly with God. It wasn't necessarily blaming my parents. It wasn't blaming other people because it was just this thing that I felt like I had to deal with inside of me, mm-hmm, that wasn't tangible for everybody else. It was like, okay, God, you made me. Did you mess up? Like, what the heck? You know, like, mm-hmm, I don't get it. And so no one had the answers. And right. I think that's where my anger and, yeah, all those negative emotions, mm-hmm, were placed onto God.
Right, right. Now, I know you said that this occurred from roughly ages 13 to 15, and then also into college as well.
Yeah.
And then you had an experience where you were introduced to AACF, mm-hmm, Asian American Christian Fellowship, and I wonder if you can talk about that, because things started changing a little bit for you after that, huh?
Definitely. If I can set the stage for it just a little bit, just to give people some context.
Yes.
You know, I was able to actually graduate middle school okay and get to high school. And, you know, I would go through these seasons where I would be doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm, you know, I started seeing a psychologist and taking medication and different counselors, and we went to family counseling and just all these different things to kind of understand.
Yeah.
And so I would be doing pretty good for, mm-hmm, you know, weeks at a time to months at a time to even maybe a year where it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then it would be really hard again.
Okay.
And I'd kind of go into this cycle. Mm-hmm. And so from middle school to graduating high school, there were a couple of those kind of like cycles that I would go through.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I had a hard time in high school too. And so setting the stage for college and why AACF was such a big place of impact for me was I was hoping that college would be more of a fresh start for me.
Yeah.
Academically, socially, mm-hmm, mentally, just where I'm at, it's like, okay, I'm finally at college. This is kind of like where I felt like everything matters. This is where you start to decide things for the rest of your life.
Future, yeah.
And so I had a hard time trusting people going into college. I would keep people at a certain distance just from my own experiences. And mm-hmm, so
Yeah.
I was definitely guarded. Mm-hmm. You know, I was friendly and open, but you're only going to get so far with me. And I kind of don't trust you. Mm-hmm. That was kind of mm-hmm. my mentality.
Yeah.
Megan DeGucci and a couple others invited me to AACF at Cal State Long Beach. And I decided to check it out. You know, I had still been attending church, but I wouldn't say I was living out my faith. Mm-hmm. It was more something that I just knew. Mm-hmm. But it was like, do I believe it for myself? Mm-hmm. So I still decided to check it out. And I was surprised. I was shocked at, and it sounds silly, but just how genuine people were.
Mm-hmm.
People would come up to me and ask me like how I'm doing. And you know, I would tell them good, like I'm doing good. I'm all right. You know, to keep my distance and keep it service level. But the same people would continually ask me each week or whenever they saw me. And
it's beyond the surface.
Beyond the surface, yeah. They would actually care like
yes.
what's going on.
Yeah.
And then when I would share that with them more and more, I could see that, oh, like these people actually care about my well-being, mm-hmm. right? Not just what I can do for them or if I'm cool or if I seem like I have it all together, but even if I was struggling and having a hard time or knowing my history and not judging me for it, like,
yeah,
I remember going home and even telling my mom, like mom, I joined this club fellowship and, there's these people that actually care about how I'm doing. And my mom's kind of looking at me funny, like, okay, like, isn't that how everybody is? I was like, no, like these people like actually care.
Right.
And she's, you know, half smiling, half like, okay, like that's cool. But for me, it was a big difference in what I've experienced in the past.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say I was bought in, but I think it started to shift
right.
my perspective and just,
yeah. Do you feel like you were able to let your guard down a little bit and gain some trust?
Yeah. I think over time it was, I was able to feel a part of the community and definitely, let my guard down and kind of be more of who God made me to be and not have up a wall of what I want to look like or not letting anybody in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so do you feel like from that experience that as far as the anxiety and panic attacks that things were okay after that?
Yeah. So in college, I think I had my, actually the first 3 years of college, mm-hmm. I think I was feeling the best that I had felt in a while.
Yeah.
And, not that my anxiety didn't bother me anymore, mm-hmm. but it was like, I was able to better deal with it,
mm-hmm.
Where it still affected me here and there, and I would have to find different ways to cope with it. But, you know, I almost kind of started to live like, oh, I've defeated it. And so I would, you know, just enjoy as much of college as I could. So I would hang out with people all the time. You know, I would stay out. We would go out to eat. I would, you know, the academic part of it wasn't my priority because I felt finally like I'm able to do a lot of the things that I want to do. And so, for the first 3 years of college, I think I had a good time and enjoyed it. And my anxiety wasn't too much of a factor.
Yeah.
But again, like kind of those previous cycles, again, I hit a really tough spot in college and actually went on academic leave because, again, I was having too hard of a time. It was affecting my grades. I was having a hard time and missing class. And, you know, in college, it's a lot different because it's not like you turn in homework every day, like when you're in grade school, right? But now it's based off of these certain bigger tests or finals and you have to study and lectures. And so it wouldn't work if I was just missing and then just tried to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually had to, go on medical leave and withdraw from classes and, actually stop for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go on leave, on medical leave, and then your parents, and again, if I'm jumping too far ahead, me know. But your parents then talk to you about the possibility of taking a trip to Australia, mm-hmm. which you ended up doing with your dad. So I wondered if you can talk about that.
Yeah. So, it sounds like it's cool. You want to go to Australia.
Yeah.
But the catch was seeing this doctor. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned before, I had seen a lot of different psychologists, psychiatrists, counselors, and I've been on and tried a lot of different medication just to see what fits me well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think in that college moment, I kind of remembering telling my mom, like, I just feel like the medication's not working anymore. Like, it was almost as if a night and day difference. I just wake up and I'm like, my body doesn't feel like, like I don't feel the same. Like, I feel weird. And
physically, not, and I just, something.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then now mentally it's like, I'm not going to be able to function as I want. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we had been talking about it and I mean, I don't remember all the details correctly and how this opportunity came up, but I just know that it wasn't a planned out. My parents had researched all this stuff. It was more of like they felt like God was opening different doors mm-hmm. for this to happen. And so
okay.
they were prayerfully wanting to take the opportunity. And so I reluctantly went. You know, it wasn't something I was like super on board for. I had my reservations. I had received a lot of different prayer and mm-hmm. seeing just a bunch of different doctors and taking a bunch of medications, you start to not be as hopeful because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you think certain things are going to be the fix. And when it's not, a lot of stuff comes crashing down and it's not a good place. And so to protect myself, I think I was very reserved. And,
probably felt like you've seen it all, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like, what makes you think this is going to work? If all this other stuff hasn't worked, you know, you kind of get tired of trying.
Yeah.
And, you can get pretty hopeless.
Yeah.
And so I think part of me willing to go was a little bit of this, like, okay, I guess I have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. So, I'll try. We'll see.
Yeah. Now, did your parents tell you what would be maybe different about this particular doctor in Australia or what would happen?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so this doctor, he takes each patient on a case by case scenario. Mm. And so no prescription or kind of game plan for that patient is the same because it's based off of that person and the things that they've gone through. And and so he approaches everything holistically, right? And so everything is more about the nutrients and the things that your body is getting and trying to restore it to kind of how it's supposed to function.
Okay.
You know, through the different foods we eat, through the different drugs we take, you know, it does take a toll on our body in different ways. And so his approach is to help restore the body to how it's supposed to function. Mm. And so that was the limited amount that we knew going in, and we didn't know what that would entail, but we knew that was the approach going in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get to Australia and then you find out about this program. And so talk about what that was like.
Looking back now, we can laugh and joke and it sounds funny, but man, going to Australia, I tell people I went to Australia and the first question is like, oh, like, where did you go? What did you do?
What did you eat? Right?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I physically went to Australia, but did I actually go and be able to, no, you know, we flew into Melbourne and, you know, just with the time difference, my first day there, I was going to see the doctor kind of right away. I had just a couple hours. And so the first kind of call and thing we get is, don't eat anything too heavy because of this routine. So I'm like, okay. And so I get to eat a salad. And that was, I think, the first of two meals that I got to have outside of this program that I was going to go through when I was in Australia. And so I was kind of in for a little bit of a rude awakening. And
and the program, I think you said, was it 10 days or was it longer than that?
So it was a 10-day fast was the first part of the program, but that was not the entirety of it. And so the first, the 10 days, I had to go on this fast and no food. The only things that I could intake was water, and the doctor would write out the ingredients and the proportions of juicing that I would do. And so, I mean, examples, I don't know off the top of my bat the exact, you know, amounts, but it'd be like 3 milliliters of beets, 5 milliliters of cabbage, 5 milliliters of potato, 6 milliliters of carrots, you know, just all these raw vegetables. And yeah. And when I'm talking juicing, I'm not talking about like Jamba Juice. Yeah. I'm talking about like they gave us a machine juicer to keep at our little apartment. And my dad and I would go to the market, buy the raw vegetables, and my dad in the morning would shoot those things, those bad boys into the juicer, and whatever came out.
Wow.
Those amounts, that's what I was drinking. And so I would get to drink 3 juices a day, and that was it. And the craziest thing was, is, you know, beets have a nice, like, deep, rich, purplish red color, right? And so when you look at it, you're like, ooh, that looks like that might taste good.
Yeah.
John, to this day, I can't eat beets. I am scarred because just, it does not taste good. There's no sugar in it. It's rabbit food, essentially. It's rabbit food. And so I'm drinking it and...
Was it hard to put down the first couple times?
Oh man. I give my dad props because, you know, he was doing a lot of the juicing for me.
Yeah.
And so every morning he would juice it, and you know, he would be a good sport and he'd taste a little bit before just to see what I was gonna have to go through, and he would tell me, yeah, after I juiced it, I tasted it, and I was like, ooh, Brett is not gonna like this. And so it was hard. It was definitely hard to put down, but I did my best to follow the program as best as I could.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you also said that you had to also see a chiropractor. That was part of the deal too?
Yeah. So I think part of the philosophy behind it is we all have kinks, or just like the way our body is aligned.
It
gets out of shape from whatever it is, injuries or playing sports or just our bad posture and things of that nature. And so part of it was to help me be aligned too, to help my organs and my spine and my lungs and the breathing and just how my body is postured and to kind of almost like have your body run at full efficiency and capacity as best as you can. And so I won't get into it on here, but the first time I saw the chiropractor, I mean, it was wild. Like, it was hilarious for my dad because I was essentially sitting in a chair, relaxed, and the chiropractor had me kind of just sit there and raise my arm, and he would just kind of almost like whip me around like a rag doll. Like,
wow.
I was shocked where I was like, what is he doing? And my dad had to leave the room because he didn't want to laugh at how ridiculous it looked. But I would go through these sessions where he would get all the kinks out, crack my neck and my spine. I would do a little bit of acupuncture or like cupping just to like, all these different things to just try to get my body back to, I guess, how it's supposed to be.
Did that make a difference, or did you feel it made a difference for you?
Emotionally and psychologically, I don't know if it scarred me, but I was kind of like, I don't like what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, half jokingly, but I do feel like, you know, I mean, there were parts of it where it felt good, like getting my back cracked and things of that nature, but I didn't see a tremendous change. You know, I didn't see something where it's like, oh my gosh, I feel completely different. And so I think part of it was just the process and journey of going through it and kind of trying to understand what's happening, but also not question it too much, because then I think I wouldn't have continued to go through with it.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Now, I wondered if you can talk about, you mentioned your dad and him taking the time to mix and make these juices for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you can talk about your relationship with your dad before the trip to Australia and then after the trip to Australia, because God really used that time to bond with your dad and show you some things, huh?
Definitely. You know, I admire my dad a lot. I look up to him and just the example he sets in many aspects of life. Yeah. But I think that time shifted my admiration. I think growing up, you know, I kind of saw my dad as that Be Like Mike commercial, right? My dad was... Yeah. My Michael Jordan, you know, he's the one that when we played board games, if I felt like I could beat him or at least compete with him, then I could beat anybody. Wow. Right. In sports, I my mom would tell me, your dad, when he was younger, he used to do this. And, you know, I would ask my dad, you know, I'd just watch all sorts of basketball tapes and ask him. And, you know, I had this picture of who he was, and I'd go ask him to play one-on-one in the backyard, I think my whole childhood. And I was like, if I can compete with him, then I can compete with anybody. Yeah. Right. The gifts that he has, the way that God has gifted him, I saw it as almost like competition. Like I need to be like that.
Yeah.
I want to be like that. I want to be better than him and like that. And so as a child, you know, there's a lot of admiration in that way. And then when I get a little older, now it's like we started to butt heads, right? He was my coach. I was actually one of the reasons why he had to stop coaching my team, just for the sake of our relationship. But it becomes this like, I want to be like him, or like, I need to be better than him.
Uh-huh, right? Uh-huh, like, and this competition. Huh?
Yeah, and it was never anything like bad, like face-to-face. But in my heart, it was like, oh, I need to be just like him. Almost like there's this pressure to meet that standard.
Yeah.
And he never said, you have to be as good as me or better than me. And he's told me at different points in my time, you know, when I was your age, like, you're way better than me than, you know, I was at your age. So it wasn't like he was putting it on me, but for myself, I think because of how much I looked up to him, was like, I need to be like that and even better. And so during this trip, you know, the first couple of days I'm in decent spirits, and so we're doing stuff together and I'm okay. But by like the fourth day, I'm feeling like I'm gonna pass out. So I come out of the shower and I tell my dad, like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like I'm going to pass out.
Yeah.
And so from that point on, I really just witnessed my dad serving me.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, my dad was a provider and he took care of a lot of stuff at the house. And so it was never a question in that way, but just like, he's all the way on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Having to deal with me in that situation, and he's waking up early and he's going to the market, he's juicing all the, getting everything set up for me so that I have to have minimal effort throughout the day, right? He's asking me how I'm feeling, how I'm doing, and I know he's frustrated and I know it hurts him in a certain way, but he's, you know, willingly sacrificing and trying to help me the best that he can in whatever way he can. And so I think I recognize that, you know, in some of my weakest, most struggling moments, that he was there doing that. And he was doing it with a positive attitude and the best perspective that he could have on it. And so it was something that I know I took to heart and something that I very much so appreciated. And I got to witness and really received, even though nothing was necessarily explicitly stated, like, hey, I'm serving you like this. Words didn't need to be spoken for me to take that in, for that to be translated to me. And so, you know, I would like to say from that point, it definitely shifted the trajectory of our relationship.
Wow.
Just because of this bond, too, of going through this, I just think it innately draws you closer to someone when you walk with them in something of that nature. It just bonds you in a way that, like, you can't create on your own necessarily, right?
Yes.
Like, I liken it to like a sports team that deals with some big adversity, right? Yeah. That's sometimes the difference between that team and the other team they're playing, is like they've gone through this thing that the other team hasn't, and so depending on how they respond to that sets the trajectory differently. And so I feel like for me and my dad, that's what it did for our relationship.
Wow. That is awesome. Yeah. It's almost like, too, you know, you're like you said, you and your dad, you're so competitive. And now that same energy, that competitiveness, he's looking after you. He's sacrificing for you. So it's like you said, seeing a different side almost of him.
Yeah. I mean, my dad was caring, and, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, he's told me that he's loved me, and he showed that. But I think just being in that setting, away from what we're used to, and I mean, just in a completely different world for me, going through that treatment, like feeling it and experiencing it then, I think was different for me. And so I don't doubt that he wasn't trying to love me before, wasn't trying to do the best for me before. But I think for me to come to that place of meeting him and seeing him on that level, I think that's where I was able to do that.
Yeah. That's awesome, Brent. Wow. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So you come back from Australia, and I think when you got back, your question was, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And so talk about that, about what you kind of came back with a different level of commitment and determination when you came back. And so I wondered if you can share about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I go through this, and I've lost a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
my body is kind of feels reset. I feel healthier in the sense that, like, you know, sometimes when you eat too much junk food, you just feel kind of like, ugh.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like that, right? I feel, if anything, I feel like I need to eat more. I need to gain back some of that. Like, I just feel like I'm cleaned out.
Right. I think you were saying something like the foods you normally eat tasted like so, like, I don't know if their foods were more salty or sweeter
definitely.
than
like stuff was way more spicy.
Yeah.
The first time I drank a beer, I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck is going on? And everything was, I was just more sensitive. I feel like, because it's almost like your body gets reset to zero.
Right.
And so like anything that comes, it's like almost brand new. Like even though I had it before, the senses are just different. And so part of that is, you know, trying to get back into life. Because I took, you know, almost a month out of my life to kind of put on pause to try to figure this thing out. And I'm coming back. And so it was kind of like, well, what's the game plan?
Right.
And, you know, I had a lot of discussions with my parents and even debating, like, I don't like school. So should I go back or what do I do? I need to figure out something. And so it started with just having a routine at home and not just sitting on the couch and watching ESPN the whole day. You know, my dad was like, if you want to get back into school, if you want to start working, like you got to get off your butt and get into a routine because you can't expect yourself to just jump from zero to all the way in.
Right.
And just be okay. And so I was like, you know what? You're right. And so I end up reapplying to get back into school at Cal State Long Beach. And because I was away for at least three semesters, I had to retake a lot of prerequisites and to be able to finish my major. And it was still difficult, you know, coming off of the trip. It wasn't some magic cure that I just all of a sudden, you know, if anything, I even had a little more anxiety of like, okay, I'm not taking any regular medication. I kind of went through this whole thing that I'm still processing, like what happened and how I feel after that. And so getting back in school was hard again, but I do feel like my approach and perspective was a little different. I liken it to more having like a business-like approach where I was like, I'm just going to come here to take care of my business and like, I was joking and telling people like, I'm not trying to make any new friends. I'm just trying to get what I need to get done and finish.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of times where it was difficult, where I wanted to quit and felt like it wasn't worth it. Times that I struggled with my anxiety still and was like, oh my gosh, like nothing has changed. I went through all of that and nothing has changed. Like I'm sick of this. But yeah, I think my new perspective and my desire to want to finish because I felt behind too. I was able to persevere through it and end up finishing.
I mean that's such an amazing testimony, and I just see it's like you took this focus and determination to another level almost, and you were able to finish school.
As much as I grew in my determination and focus, I think I also I think through my whole journey of mental health, God has kind of broken my heart to have more empathy.
Oh, okay.
And so I think this coming back this time, the level of determination and empathy I had was greater than I've had before.
Huh. Okay.
And so it wasn't this determination where it was like solely based on my will and just like, I need to perform. Mm-hmm. Part of it too was like, man, if this is the journey that I went through, like, you never know what somebody else is going through, uh-huh. right? And I knew that mm-hmm. there's people that have it worse than me.
Yeah.
And so part of my fight was like, yeah, it sucks, but I know that there's people that are going through the same thing as me, or
wow,
they don't have parents or people that will support them, or a community or a church that will support them like the way I was supported.
Yeah.
And so I can't waste that, you know, like yeah. I need to have some of that Mamba mentality when it comes to that. And so it was this duality of like, I need to get my business done and I don't want to talk to anyone and I'm not here to play around, mm-hmm. but it was also this like, I kind of want to do it because I am thankful for the opportunity I have, as much as it sucks. Yeah. Like, not everybody is in the same position that I am. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the right thing to do is to finish. And so I think those were the two things that were pushing me to go, because otherwise yeah. I would have been out of there.
Yeah. And you mentioned empathy. It sounds like God gave you this ability. You could really relate to people when they would go through struggles, or they would have fears and anxiety that they were dealing with, that you had an understanding, a connection with people that were going through similar situations.
Totally. And, you know, I think I never expected anyone to just like fully relate to me, but growing up, I didn't know anybody that was struggling. Yeah. None of my friends, like maybe they were and they didn't tell me.
They didn't talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't talked about like it is today.
Yeah.
But I remember telling my mom, like, when I'm going through this, and I would share with people what I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, and this is no fault to anybody, but they would tell me, sure. Oh, Brett, I never would have guessed that you deal with that, or you struggle with A, B, C, and D, mm-hmm. right? You know, people would joke even, you know, I would have a basketball game, and I would be choking or begging Damon. Damon was my coach, to take me out, or I would having such a dreadful time before the game even started. And then some games I'd play and I would be awesome. Mm. And people would be like, what the heck? Like, how come, like, it's such a stark difference. And so mm-hmm. people would all the time tell me, I never would have guessed you struggle or deal with this. And I think even at a pretty young age, I had enough time to reflect, or maybe even forced to mature in looking at it, and not only looking at my own situation, but like, man, if people wouldn't have assumed or thought that I would go through that, like, how do you know what anyone's going through? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, how can you, like, what does somebody that has an anxiety disorder or deal with panic attacks, like, okay, maybe you didn't assume that I was someone that deal with that, but what does someone that does deal, what does that look like then?
Right.
And so for me, it was like, you never know what crap people are going through.
Right.
Because everybody's got their stuff to deal with.
Right.
And so I think from very early on, my mindset was like, I'm not going to be somebody that puts more crap onto somebody else because you don't know what they're going through. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that happened to me in high school and the people that I had to deal with and why I was so almost like scarred or jaded going into college was because people were treating me ways where it's like, you don't know what I'm going through and what's going on and how I'm feeling and how hard things are for me. Mm-hmm. And like, if you knew, would that change how you're treating somebody? I would like to think that it would, but I didn't want to treat people that way just because I know a reason. Mm-hmm. Just because somebody is struggling with something, oh, now I'm going to treat you better.
Right.
It's like, no, like, I know what it's like to be down in the dumps, like way down there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to treat people, not that they're down in the dumps, but I'm going to give the person who's down in the dumps the same level of love and respect as the person that isn't,
yeah,
whether I know it or not.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. And so wow. I think that's where my empathy comes from.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was really grown in me by uh-huh. first breaking my own ego and how I felt and all of that to kind of give me this other perspective.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Sorry, that's a little bit of a tangent.
No, but, not at all. No, that's so good. God has laid a foundation for you personally, and I think that's awesome that you have this expectation of how you want to treat people, and it has nothing to do with what they've shared with you or what they've gone through, but that's your standard. And wow, that's really awesome. Fast forward, mm-hmm. you get a chance to go to a Catalyst Church retreat.
Yes.
And God did some amazing things. It revealed some amazing things to you. And so I wondered if you can share about that.
Yeah. I love Catalyst and our church. And, you know, sometimes, you know, our worship and praise and, just our DNA, how we are, you know, it can seem a little wonky from the outside, or if you were to just come in, you could question it a lot. And to be honest, I you know, had to wrestle with myself. How do I feel about this? But, you know, I came into the retreat looking forward to it. And, this one, yeah, I don't know, remember the exact year, but, I know the year prior, my mom had sent me a song, sent our family a song, that song, Another in the Fire.
Yeah.
Right. And she had just shared how she really likes this message and just that, like, she kind of has an anthem, like, for seasons of, like, right now I feel like God's really pressing this upon my heart. And so we go to the retreat and it's great. It's great. And, you know, the CBC worship team is there leading for us. And one of the evenings, they play the song. Mm-hmm. And instantly, I'm in tears. There's just this wave that just comes over me. And I'm a mess.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the full ugly cry, John.
And so what's going on inside you as the tears are flowing?
At first, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I just am kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
But what ends up happening is kind of like these events in my life kind of flash in my mind. You know, I've received prayer and I've done multiple, you know, prayer sessions, IPMs, and meet with different people. I've met with different Christian counselors.
Yeah.
I've seen a bunch of different people. And, I remember going through, one of them specifically where they ask you to go back into a memory that you have. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the memory is something that's negative or a time where you felt betrayed or hurt or mm-hmm. something. And they ask you, well, where is God in there? Mm-hmm. Right. When you go back to that picture, where's God?
Yes.
And to be completely honest, I never saw God in any of those pictures. Mm. I think in my head, I theoretically knew that God was there because he is everywhere. He is omnipresent.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I never felt God there because I think, oh man, there's a level of like disappointment and frustration when, sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
You think about, times when you're helpless.
Yes.
When you're going through things that you can't understand.
Yeah.
When you're going through panic attacks or.
Yeah.
You're crying out for help. Mm. And for me to imagine those situations.
Yeah.
And God being there and not intervening. Mm. Mm.
I don't think I could reconcile that when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it would only make me more angry to picture that time at the baseball field and to tell them, oh yeah, I see God standing over there. Mm-hmm. And they ask me, what is he doing? And I say nothing. Mm-hmm. Like I already had dealt with so much bitterness and frustration that I couldn't get myself to take it to that point. Mm-hmm. And so at the retreat, these moments again are flashing in my head.
Yes.
And that question is being asked to me. I could hear it. Well, where is God in it? And you know, the song talks about there being another in the fire, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so
yes,
I end up walking to the front. I was in the back for worship. I end up walking to the front and I'm just on my knees, like crying, like bowing down, just crying. And
yeah.
The picture didn't come to mind that I saw God there, but I soon feel like just in my deepest, I feel it in my bones that like, no, yeah. God was there.
Wow.
And I didn't have to question, well, where were you then? Like, how come, like, it was just this like,
it's like you knew.
Yeah.
You knew in your heart that he had been there with you the whole
yeah,
time.
Yeah. There was just something that made me feel and know yeah. that like, no, God was there.
Yeah.
God was there and God is there. And so I just spent that whole song just like almost like in complete like abandonment. Like I was just hunched over down on my knees and crying and just soaking that all, whatever yes. that was, I didn't even know what it was, just soaking all of that in. Like yes. I was just yes. like, whatever this moment and whatever's going on and the things that I'm feeling and the yeah. things that are coming to mind and the ways that I feel like, yeah, I'm hearing yes. that, you know, God was, I'm just trying to be completely there.
Yes, yes.
And so whatever's yes. going on, I was like, I don't care if I'm ugly crying and I got snot going down my nose and... And so that moment was huge in me feeling like, no, God's there with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Did you sense a feeling of being covered in that moment?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think there was just this, yeah, different sense of God being there. Like yeah. there is someone that has my back, that there is somebody that
yeah. Yeah.
is there that hears my prayers, that hears me crying out, that sees the things that I'm going through and
yeah.
Is covering yeah. all of it.
Yeah.
And was there in the past, was with me in that moment and
yes.
and is there for what's to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking back at it now, Brett, what would be the emotion that you were sensing in that moment, if you had to mention an emotion?
I do think there was some sadness just because it was like, I wish I knew or could have felt that through all those moments and times that were kind of flashing through my head and back then when I was
yeah.
younger.
Yeah.
So there was a part of that. There's definitely a relief. I do feel like there was just something taken away from me, whether it was lies, whether it was uh-huh, things I was uh-huh. believing in. And so there was just this weight that was, I feel like, freed.
Yeah. yeah.
And then also I yeah. think there was just this almost like empowerment. Like when you know that God is with you, there's yes. a different sense of
yes.
confidence,
yes,
comfortability, uh-huh. faith. And so I think it was a mix of things that
yeah.
I had to really process because I didn't know how to pinpoint it exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, looking back, I think yeah. it would be a mixture of those things.
Right. I think you had mentioned that your confidence grew in trusting in the unseen.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you also mentioned hope as well, huh? Did you feel hopeful at that point?
I think after that, It was like, okay, because of that shift, because of that having more confidence, it definitely changed my outlook. Because before, like I told you, I would be very guarded with hope because I didn't want anything coming crashing down again.
Yeah, right.
And so I think it restored the hope that I was missing.
Wow. And, you know, I just, as you were sharing, Brett, I just wanted to quote a scripture, Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and the assurance about what we do not see. And, you know, I just wanted to read, you had mentioned that song, and there was another in the fire, and I thought it was just so powerful as I was reflecting on those words that touched you so much that I just wanted to read that, one of the choruses. There was another in the fire standing next to me. There was another in the waters holding back the seas. And should I ever need reminding of how I've been set free, there is a cross that bears the burden where another died for me.
Mm-hmm.
And just so powerful. I thought those words would be worth repeating again, and just the impact that that had on you. And so I wanted to ask you something else, because as you're going through the struggles and the challenges, you got a perspective from Pastor Barry as well, and I wondered if you can share about that and maybe how this connects to what God has been showing you and teaching you.
So you know, I'm very thankful for Pastor Barry and the relationship I've been able to build with him, and you know, just being family friends. And obviously, I have so much respect for him in leading our church and wanting the best for us. And so, you know, throughout my journey, he's prayed for me. He's met with me one on one, and one of the times we met, he was asking me about my health journey. And, you know, I would complain to him some. And if you ever meet with Pastor Barry, sometimes he is a man of few words. He listens and he nods his head and kind of just asks you, like, well, what do you think about it? And doesn't want to give too much of his opinion. But something he said to me initially, kind of I was taken aback by, but I've come to really grow in it. And when I was describing to him my health journey and how I felt about it before leaving, I remember I was about to walk out the door and he said, you know, Brett, maybe, you know, this anxiety disorder and the things you're going through in your journey isn't something from God. You know, I don't think he put this bad thing on you because that's not in God's character.
Right.
But maybe the ways that he's using it for good is allowing you to go through it because that forces you to rely on him more than maybe someone else who isn't going through that would have to rely on him. And at first I'm like, well, like, I'd rather trade with that other person.
Could it be something else?
Yeah, could it be something else? But,
yeah,
you know, as I've kind of grown with that and, and had to sit with that and, like, what does that mean, right? Like, okay, so you're saying that I need this in order for me to rely on God? I mean, not necessarily, but I can see how something of this nature, because I think there's a lot of people, I'm not the only one. I don't want to make it sound like I'm special, woe is me. And, you know, there's we all go through a bunch of different things. And some of these things, it takes us to this point. I read this book, and it's, I think our church might actually go through it, but Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And they talk about this point where you come to this wall where you're at the end of yourself. And this health journey took me to that wall many a time. And so when you're at that place, right, you search or reach out for something. Right, I could see why a lot of people reach out for drugs. They reach out for these other addictions. They reach out for things that they feel like is going to relieve them. Right. Just any kind of relief.
Yes.
Right? I could see why. I've been in places and times where I've thought about things that are not very good. But when you have faith, there's a lot of times that I can't put into words, I can't fill in that gap for myself. My understanding, my reasoning, my whatever it might be. But in those desperate times where I'm beyond myself, it is leaning and relying on the Lord.
Yeah.
Right? It is that almost being forced to, like, there is, what else is there? Right? And so I rather put my hope and trust and faith in the God of the universe than some other thing that, okay, maybe for the next 3 minutes I feel a little bit better, but it's not changing anything.
Right.
And so I think as I was able to dive deeper into what Pastor Barry was talking about and see what does that look like for me, it does have a profound impact on my relationship with God.
Yeah, yeah. And I wondered if you can talk about some ways that you do rely on God today, even today, because I know that you've said, you know, this is really a journey that you're still on.
Yeah.
And there are times where things might get tough. And you quoted a verse. I don't know if you remember, you want to quote that verse again, but sometimes there's things that you have to remind yourself several times during a day, even, huh? To help you to bring on this reliance in God.
For sure. One of my, I don't even want to call it a coping thing because it's more than a coping thing.
Yeah, but sure.
Prayer became
so
vital in my walk, in my journey, just to deal with life. Like, I don't even want to just say, oh, in my spiritual life. No, just life as a whole.
Yeah.
Right? So. Yeah. My anxiety would pop up, not in just like pressure performance situations, but even like going out to dinner with family, going to spend time with Brittany when we were dating, going to a concert, going to Disneyland, like things that are supposed to be super enjoyable. Like I would still, it wouldn't just pick and choose hard things, right?
Yeah.
And so my prayer life transformed to needing to talk to God daily and more than one time a day.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be as simple as I'm driving to go pick up Brittany out on a date. And that sounds, in a worldly sense to me, it sounds pathetic that you need to ask God for help to go on a date. But it would be like, okay, God, you know how I'm feeling. You know my heart.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I'm struggling and I'm feeling anxious. And so in your name, I ask that you take those thoughts and feelings away and instead you fill them with more of your truth, right? Mm-hmm. I lay down all my thoughts and make them obedient to you.
Yes.
You take captive of those things and we make them obedient to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so God, let me instead see her the way you want me to see her. Let me be able to interact with her family the way you want me to. Let me notice the things that you want me to notice. Let me have ears to hear the things the way that you want me to hear. Like, give me something else. Instead of having these nervous thoughts and anxieties and feeling like I'm going to choke and what happens and am I going to have to leave? Am I going to have to cancel? Whatever it might be. Instead, like, give me something else.
Yeah.
And so, God, in your name, we ask that anything that's not from you,
yes,
take it away and instead let it be from you. And I would be saying that audibly in my car on the way to wherever.
Yes.
It could be to school. It could be to a date. It could be to a concert. It could be to a family gathering. Yes. I have prayed like that, like, I mean, thousands of times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's so powerful. I mean, I just think for myself, If I could, and by the way, that the verse that Brett just quoted was 2 Corinthians 10:4-5. But I'm thinking, my gosh, if I can, in those difficult moments or decisions that I have to make where I start getting into negative thinking, if I could just quote that verse every day, I could have more peace, more victories, more, probably even hear from God better if I would do that. And so it's just so powerful what you shared. And so, Brett, as we're winding down our time together, if you had to pass on a word of advice or a word of encouragement to someone else who are going through different type of struggles, whether it be fear or anxiety, what would be your words for them?
That's tough. Yeah. One for sure, you're not alone.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away from what you're going through, but there are other people that are dealing with things similar or maybe even worse. And that's not to discredit anyone and say, well, this person's got it worse, so you just suck it up. But it's no, like, you're not alone. I think the enemy could very easily make us feel isolated and alone. And once we're in that place, I think that's where a lot of hopelessness and where we feel defenseless and more susceptible to just all kinds of things. And so ultimately, you're not alone because there's people around you, but also, like, God's there.
Yeah.
You know, it may not feel like it because I've been there. I have told people I don't feel God, like God's not there, but he is, you know, and it sounds simple and people have probably heard that a million times. And so I don't want to sound like a broken record to them, but he's there with you and he may not be intervening like you want or you think is best, but it doesn't mean that he's not there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so even if you have the slimmest amount of hope, having the slimmest amount of hope in the God that created everything, you have to hold on to that at the minimum because, yeah, when you're at a place where you're besides yourself, outside of yourself, you can't. He's the only one. He is the only one, the only thing that can meet you in that place,
yeah,
and give you something that is satisfactory for what you might need or what you know. Mm-hmm. And so for sure, I would want to let anyone who's dealing with anything that, you know, yeah, you're not alone. And also that there's people that want to walk with you in it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You may think it's a burden, but there's so many people out there that it's not a burden to them. They want to walk with you in it. They want to carry, you know, maybe it is a burden, but they want to carry that burden with you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You are not a negative. You are not a hindrance. You are not a pain in the butt to somebody else. Like, I used to think a lot of those things about myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do not, and if people view you that way, they don't need to be a part of your life.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
But you are not any less. For me personally, if you're dealing with something and I can just listen to your story or try to be any kind of help or support, you are an addition. You are a gain to me. You are not seen as a negative. And so there are people out there that view it that way too.
Yes.
And so don't just keep it to yourself because it can get to be a scary and dark place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to take too much of your time, John, but there's everyone's going through something.
Yeah.
And so you are not any more of a burden than anybody else. And no thing is too big for God. And so if we are supposed to then emulate who God is to other people, yeah, I may not be able to have an answer for you and I may not be able to fix it, but I can help have the faith that I know a God who knows the answer. It's not too big for him. And so we can walk with people in it, even if we can't fix it. And oftentimes, I don't think we're supposed to fix it. Mm-hmm. It's not our job necessarily.
Yeah. Wow. You are such an inspiration, Brett, and I just think those young men and women in the Forge are so blessed to have you in their lives and walking with them on their journeys. Mm. So that was the thought that just came in, that they are so blessed. I want to, as we close our time, thank you for the courage to be here and share openly, share honestly from your heart, your journey and your testimony with us.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. And I think what you're doing can definitely help even in the areas that we're talking about. Getting people's stories out there that show that just because we believe in God, just because we're Christians, doesn't mean everything's all rainbows and butterflies. Yeah. And if it is, I mean, more power to you.
Right. Right.
But, you know, God also, Jesus also came to minister to the weak, to the sick, to the hurt, to the lost.
Yeah.
We're all lost at times. And you know, I think what you're doing and this platform has been such a inspiration to me. It's been encouraging to me to continue in my journey. It's been uplifting, and it's been just great to hear from people that you might not have heard from before, that, you know, all of those stories deserve a listen, and especially when they reflect more of who God is and we all get to get a taste of that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate what you're doing and the ways that God has allowed you to help bring this out in people. Mm-hmm. It's one to just get on a mic and share, but the way that you make people feel comfortable and walk them through it, and, you know, firsthand I've been able to experience that, it doesn't really get much easier than the way that you lay it out for people. And so I love Catalyst Stories, and I'm thankful that you asked me to be a part of it, and I will continue to be a cheerleader, cheering it on.
Yeah, well, thanks, Brett. I really appreciate those words. And I know God is continuing to write the chapters on your journey. And I can't wait to keep reading those chapters as he fills the pages with more amazing testimonies of his hand in your life. And I'd like to close our time by lifting up a prayer of thanksgiving for your amazing testimony and for listeners as well.
Sounds great.
Yeah, let's pray. Thank you, Jesus, for Brett's incredible journey with you. And while I don't want to minimize at all the struggles and the challenges that he has faced, you have called Brett to walk with you and rely on you during this adventure that he is on, that you might shine bright for Brett. And Lord, I just think we cannot have the testimony without the test. And it's almost like the greater the test, the greater the testimony. And so, Lord, just like you've done for Brett, help us all to rely and trust in you, that in every difficulty or challenge we face, that your power and your name might be glorified and lifted high. And Lord, also thank you for revealing to Brett that you are always right there next to him, in the fire, during his darkest moments, that you never gave him anything that was too difficult for him to bear and overcome. And Lord, help us to know that in our hearts you are always with us, like you've promised never to leave us or forsake us. That's Hebrews 13:5. And Lord, thank you for allowing Brett to have more grace for himself, as he has shared with me, Lord, in the past. Lord Jesus, you are the ultimate giver of grace, that we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And Lord, thank you for the blessings that you've bestowed on Brett. When I think of Brett, I just think of not only the healing that's taken place in his life, but Lord, for just providing him with an awesome wife in Brittany and leadership roles, and for continuing to show Brett his reliance on you. Just thank you for that. And now, Lord Jesus, may you use these testimonies in Brett's life to inspire all of us to become all that you created and called us to be in Christ Jesus. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thanks, Brett. And that's it for today's episode of Catalyst Stories. Until next time, take the time to reflect on and share your God-given testimonies and see how God uses you to become a catalyst of encouragement and inspiration to others. God bless.